what's wrong with my kid? Why is his poop weird? You know, things like that, things you don't want to ask anybody out loud, so you Google it.
Did I say that out loud?
Welcome to Did I Say That Out Loud, a podcast where Stu Eddins and Mariah Tang reflect on agency life and answer questions from our higher ed and healthcare clients about the latest in digital marketing, content, and SEO.
We're going to talk about something today that's kind of cool. Why do blogs outperform regular content? Now, regular content can be in healthcare service line pages. It can be program pages for higher ed. It can be product description pages if you're selling things like services or product bundled with services online. In other words, we're talking about your regular website content, and we're talking about blog content, and often blog content is considered variable content because it changes a lot. It's not that you know, you're at the whim and fancy of whoever's writing a blog, though sometimes you are. That's not why it's variable. It's that the same topic can be discussed from multiple angles, and that can be the variability too. Over the years, Mariah, you've noticed something that I've noticed, and I think anybody who pays attention has probably seen. You see your blog articles coming out at the top of viewership over content, regular content pages, time and time again.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
There's a lot of reasons. Sometimes it's a timeliness factor. So if there's something trending in the news or something that happened on, you know, the TV show that's sweeping the nation, we've seen this happen too. I think it was the show This Is Us several years ago. We were working with a hospital group out of Washington, D.C., and there was a widowmaker heart attack in one of the characters, and nobody had really ever heard much about this. And so overnight, we wrote a blog about it, published it the next day, and it hit number one on Google from all the search markets. And it stayed there for quite some time while the show was popular. And still, if you Google, you know, you can, it'll crop up. It's because of the timeliness. It's because there wasn't a lot of content out there about it. And we just hit it at the moment where everybody was Googling, you know, what's a widowmaker heart attack?
Yeah.
Or, you know, would somebody have lived if this was real life kind of questions.
Yeah. And again, to return to healthcare, we saw the same thing. We were already, I think, preparing a little bit of an outline, an article about fentanyl and opioids. And the day after Prince died, we were able to get something up. And it just roared to page one, top of page, quickly. Now, in some ways, Google does look for timeliness in content. And if it's timely and news and it's getting signals all over the place, it will push it to the top. And, you know, we've had all sorts of assistance we've given clients to make sure that they're right there for that lightning moment of getting timely content up so that they get noticed. But I've noticed some things that you have too. I had a client who had an article, a blog article on toddler constipation. The article was like 7 years old, and it was always still the number one most viewed page on their website. Toddler constipation.
Yeah, that brings us to point number two, Stu. Look at you, number two.
Hey.
Well, we did that on purpose.
Yeah, give me the $5 bill.
It's a relevance factor. It's a question that is asked by just about every parent out there. You know, what's wrong with my kid? Why is his poop weird? You know, things like that. Things you don't want to ask anybody out loud, so you Google it. And it's those micro moments when you're the one that's able to provide that answer that it just reinforces, yes, there are other people wondering about this too. Perhaps my kid is just fine and I need to feed him some vegetables. And it also gives that brand reassurance that it's coming from a Henry Ford or a UT Southwestern or another great big organization that clearly has the expertise to, you know, answer these questions for you. So it's a validation of the question you're asking and then answering it in that micro moment.
Yeah. And I see this on a lot of websites that have a somewhat active blog. I say somewhat active. It's not like they're posting every single day, but they have some regularity to their posting. Frequency does draw attention to a blog more often, not just from Google, Bing, and Yahoo, but from the people themselves. People are searching for stuff. The thing I've noticed is, particularly with that type of a question or a widowmaker heart attack, something, there are these timely things that are out there, but they have a evergreen type of a presence. This is something that people have asked about their kid from time out of mind. This is something people are concerned about with heart conditions from time out of mind. The best part about it is it develops traffic coming to your website, and it comes from a number of different sources, a number of people groups, all sorts of things come together to lift that piece of content to the stratosphere as far as viewership. And let's be careful here. There are also some things that are slightly more obscure topics, rare disease or a highly specialized college program. So the search volume is not terribly high. That doesn't mean you can't own it at the top by being by having blog content that's worthy of attention.
Point number three in my brain is always the shareability and the relevance. If, like you said, if you can own a slice of an audience or a niche topic, you can stay at the top all day long and you're going to reach exactly the people that you're trying to reach. And we work with the University of New Mexico Health Sciences Center on their neurology blog. And we worked with them on a story that actually won a digital health award a few years ago. It was about a day in the life of one of their fellows training to be a very specialized form of neurologist.
Yeah.
And there was no content out there about this. The only content that really existed that we could find were those program type pages or about our fellowship and really, you know, lauding the universities that were, you know, putting forth this fellowship. We took it the other way. We made this fun visual timeline. We spoke with an actual resident or fellow about what this day would actually be like, starting at 0400 and ending at, you know, whatever the equivalent is, super late at night. And it was really interesting because it only was a matter of a week, maybe 2 weeks, that it was at the top of Google. It was outranking Johns Hopkins. It was outranking some of the other regional academic medical centers that also offered this fellowship. But the content on those sites was boring. And the content that we put together was fun. It was relevant. It was shareable. And to your point earlier, it's variable. So if, you know, for whatever reason, they change up their program, swap in a new picture, swap in a new timestamp, that content's ready to go. And it offered lots and lots of interconnectivity with the other pages on their site that admittedly were a little bit more boring, but you can link out to the, you know, the about the curriculum. You can link out to check out stories from the residents. You can link out to the virtual tour of the labs, whatever it is, but it provides that kind of fun entry point, the entertaining entry point that is really shareable because of that relevance.
That's cool. That's pretty good. Another thing that we need to talk about a little bit, when I'm doing reporting on website behaviors through analytics, when I'm asked to track down the behaviors within a particular segment of the website, it works across everything. I mean, I've worked in legal, I've worked in healthcare, I've worked with it in higher ed, because it's not the content I'm about to ask you about, it's about the people. And what happens is the blog articles outshine the regular content in organic search. I once had, let's start with a healthcare example. I once had a cardiologist that was very upset that the blog articles were ranking higher and getting more traffic than his actual, he was the stakeholder for the department. The department pages in the website were not getting that type of attention. The thing we were able to do is help that particular doctor understand something. She had a valid concern, first off. But secondly, it opened up an opportunity to have a discussion. If you think about the way the content is used, when people have a question about heart health, when they have a question about, you know, what I want to be when I grow up, what programs do I want to take in college, that type of thing, that is the research. That's that middle decision phase that people go through. They spend a lot more time there than they do at the commitment end of that particular process. They want to get more information. And the more often you are able to provide information points in that decision path, you increase the likelihood they're going to choose you for the solution. So in a way, we really do want to have the blog content coming up higher in search for specific searches.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody searches for best business program in 50 miles or cardiologist in Omaha, Nebraska or something, you don't want the blog articles coming up for that.
Yeah.
Very different type of search. In fact, the two I just mentioned about proximity and about location, they tend to be more transactional than informational.
Yep.
And that does tend to get down to that pointy end of the funnel, where I'm ready to make a decision. Let's get these questions answered about who's closest, who's nearest, who's cheapest, who's best, who's whatever. But the middle part, that section about why is my kid constipated? What's going on with this particular heart condition that I need to be aware of? Think about this way. Sex in the City came back on TV and Mr. Bick died on a Peloton.
Can you, oh,
I know. Well,
don't get me started.
Well, the thing is, they also proved two things. Not only did Peloton sales drop a little bit, but searches for it went up right through the roof. It was not the product. Can home exercise influence my heart health? So there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the immediacy of the moment when the news is hot and it's coming at you. But there's also the stuff that hangs around forever. And it's that evergreen middle section where you want to have more data points, more content pages, ranking higher perhaps for specific searches. When it comes to the transactional help me decide who questions, that's where you want your regular content pages to step forward, perhaps.
Yeah, like you build that web of context around. You build the stories, you build the examples, the testimonials, the dispelling of myths about riding your Peloton at home.
Right.
From that point, you can then drive them all to the logical conclusion of, do we need care right now? Do we need to sign up for this program right now? If not, here's some more information that you might find useful in your life. Good luck. We'll see you when you're ready.
Yeah.
And so it's really just keeping that continual conversation happening. And, you know, I have to be a little snarky because that's my way. A few years ago, we'll say like about 10 years ago, I had an executive tell me to my face, content marketing is never going to be a viable sales opportunity for you. You should kind of hang it up. And from that point, it just made me more angry and more passionate about what I do, what my team does, what we do as a whole. And if you fast forward to today, just about every campaign that we work on for big clients, for small clients, for people in the middle, we're recommending some aspect of storytelling, whether it's a lengthy, you know, content marketing experience with social ads, with podcasts, with vlogs, with blog, whatever it might be, or it's just one or two stories to say, let's explain this, and then you can drive your campaign from these pages. It's integral. I mean, it's super effective, it's relevant, and it's by far one of the easiest entry points, I think, for organizations to get into. Everybody has stories. All of your stakeholders have stories. All of your patients or students have stories. It's just a matter of capturing them and deciding how to strategically tell those stories, while also lifting up the rest of your pages.
Yeah. And first off, remind me never to challenge you that way. But there's also another aspect about the difference between what I would consider to be the regular website content and the blog content. One is more human than the other. You have to have more of a corporate voice on regular content pages. I mean, if you want to put yourself to sleep at night, go to almost any higher ed website and start reading their program catalog. That's some pretty dry stuff. How many different ways can you describe business accounting classes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's some variety, otherwise we wouldn't have so many offerings. But really, when it comes down to it, what you have is a back of the package description of what's inside, and that's it.
Yeah.
It is somewhat brief. It is to the point. There's no human connection to it much.
Yeah.
There's a time and place for it, believe me. People want to know this stuff.
It's that pointy end that you spoke about before.
Right, right. But people make their decisions with data based on sentiment, feeling, and humanity. They don't make a totally Mr. Spock decision, totally on logic, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
More often than not, it's, well, you know, this looks pretty good to me. And everything I've read so far says these people are like me too.
Mm-hmm.
It's making the human connection, the community connection, however you care to think about it. And it's kind of vital. I've found, and I have absolutely no hard data to back it up, but just observationally, that when we have a chunk of website content, and again, it could be a service line, a program, it could be whatever you want to think of it, the product or offering, and it's out there, and it does pretty well. You know, you'll get X number of signups, you'll get Y number of phone calls, and so on. But if there's a network of related blog content, variable content, you can call it blog, you can call it news, you can call it this is what we think, whatever the heck you call it. But there's that variability out there that had connection in that middle part of my path for decision-making. What I find is if you have that content and it connects to your regular internal content, that descriptive page, what we find is that the conversion rate, the number of forms and calls you get, whatever it is, goes up. Mm-hmm. You can have all sorts of blog content, news content, whatever you care to call it, PR content. If you don't connect it to your regular content, all you have is a readership. You don't tend to have the development of a lead or a prospect.
Yeah.
And so that's the other part that's kind of important.
Yeah.
Take the humanity you've developed over here with the blog or the variable content, and now give it direction with the interior content of your website that says, okay, now that you know us, now you know what we do, here's what it is, and here's how we take care of it.
Yeah. The smart organizations are wrapping it all together. So your blog lives within your regular website. It lives page to page through your service lines, through your programs, whatever it is, as an embed. It's that constant interaction of, hey, you're here at this point, but remember, we have all of this other context at this other point too. And, you know, we've seen organizations put RFI forms on blogs. We've seen them put apply now kind of things, kind of calls to action in the middle. You know, as long as it's relevant and as long as it's driving, those blog pages can be really versatile for campaigns or, you know, even just ongoing education to the audience.
And when we're doing marketing, we get involved with things like digital marketing and advertising. We get involved with pay-per-click. We get involved with impressions and reach. We get involved with all sorts of nice little metrics that describe eyeballs on content and fingers on mouse clicks. But I'll bet you anything that if you have a site that has a really well-developed supporting content in blog, news, or PR, whatever you call it, and you have the same related content on the website in the service line program descriptive, this is what it is content, I would bet dollars to donuts that the one gets shared among people, the other one does not. I don't often see somebody who's come to that business accounting page and been so blown over by it, but they click that share button and it's out on X tomorrow.
Look how boring I am.
Yes. However, if somebody reads a testimonial in the form of a blog article about the experience of being in business accounting at this particular institution, about my interactions with these pediatricians at this hospital, they read those testimonials, that humanizing content, that gets shared. And as much as it pains my digital marketing heart to say it, word of mouth wins time and time again. It is the thought leadership. It is that connection you make with people. And that variable content section is where that really gets developed. And it takes time.
You can't buy from somebody if you don't know they exist.
Right.
And you don't know they exist till you have a problem that requires you to find out.
Yeah. And, you know, we were looking for some help with some house cleaning for my parents. And there's more transactional intent with that. We were going right to the content pages to see what people did, but we were also paying attention to reviews. We were paying attention to the website's blog content in this case, because it described happy customers and what they were getting. It described in depth what it means. You know, we clean your kitchen. Great. What does that mean? And in the blog content, a couple of them actually talked about what they clean for food safety and put it in that context, as opposed to we wipe down your counters and cupboards. They gave a little more insight into it. We chose the one that had more supporting content because, for one thing, they gave comfort with their answers. For the other thing, they also gave us something as far as a mark. We'd say, hey, you said you do this. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see evidence that this is really going on. This is what I expect now.
Yeah.
So it can be helpful in that regard as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we've talked about why blogs outperform regular content. We've looked at why that can be a very good thing. We've also discussed only briefly the need to interconnect all this stuff. We've talked about interconnecting your website content on other podcasts.
I talk about it all day. Twice.
Yeah. But it is critically important to create not just the content, but the internal web of your website that links all this stuff together, the connective tissue that says, you've read this, now do that. Or you've read this, here's some more supporting information, then go do that. All of that is tied together. And yes, that's why often blog content will outrank regular content on the website for a given theme.
Thanks for listening to Did I Say That Out Loud with Stu Eddins and Mariah Tang. Check out the show notes for more information about today's episode. And if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, hit us up anytime at staymates.com.